Welcome to the Late Breaks Hot Takes American F1 Podcast. Bringing you post-race analysis, predictions, sports betting, and often outrageous hot takes. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at F1 Hot Takes Pod. Now, on to the show.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to probably what will be the sleepiest podcast of this season. I think we're all recovering either from being out way too late last night or staying up to watch the Australian Grand Prix kick off here at least 1 o'clock East Coast time for me. So it wasn't quite as bad as qualifying, but it involved quite a bit of coffee to stay up in what was also a sleepless weekend from a lot of great sports with Long Beach IndyCar race and the Masters on. So a big weekend of sports and not a lot of sleep, but the Australian GP certainly was an exciting one to watch.
Dude, quality was so rough. That's all I have to say about that. Oh, my God.
Quality was brutal. I mean, it started, what was it, East Coast time? Two o'clock? And then I think I got to bed. Well, okay, I fell asleep on the couch. So I didn't actually made it to bed until I think I woke up at like 6 a.m. when the sun was starting to come up. And I was like, shit. Yeah. So rough sleep schedule. I think risk is a little, not quite as bad for you.
I mean, yeah, but back-to-back days being up till 2 a.m. is still not easy for me anymore.
You're getting old, buddy.
I know. It's disappointing.
Yeah, age hits everybody hard, but at least it wasn't like a snooze fest of a race. So it was entertaining to watch and kind of kept you on the edge. And there was a little bit of it like DRS train stuff going on, which it is what it is. I think that kind of always happens there. But it was fun. You were kind of kept on the edge of your seat, just waiting to see if Max is going to be able to crawl his way back. And then boom, engine blew up or whatever happened. But shit, fun race.
Yeah, it was a good race. Not so much once Max got out, it got a little boring. And even when Max was in, it was the restarts were kind of exciting. But once Leclerc kind of got in front, it was you could tell it was difficult for Max to keep up with him for a little bit there. So, but overall, I think it was entertaining. But I mean, honestly, the races this year have been so entertaining that this one, I could see how some people would be like, it was a little boring just because we've been spoiled, I think, for the first two. So.
Yeah, there was really good midfield action, though, I thought. So, yeah. the race for the lead was kind of, I mean, I think Charles just got the lead and went to sleep, and he could comfortably manage the pace. But, I mean, the midfield battles were pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I always have trouble getting excited for midfield battles. I know the points mean a lot to the teams, but do I really care if Williams scores a point?
If you ain't first, you're last.
Right. Well, I mean, I was so conditioned over the last several seasons when it's just been like there's no fight for the lead because Lewis is so dominant that like I think I've conditioned myself to enjoy the midfield battles more. And I think in prior years there was TV director didn't really focus on them quite a bit, so you'd see maybe the pass but not the setup for the pass, and then it would go back to watching Lewis with a 30 second lead or Max with a 15 second lead, and they barely showed Leclerc at all in this race when he had the lead. And I think that was awesome because it lets you see what was actually happening towards the back of the field, or at least on F1 TV. I don't know about the Sky Sports feed. I got committed to F1 TV's stream and then realized it was like 2 minutes behind, so then I just couldn't get myself to switch over to the main one, fearing I was going to miss something.
And I think
it was the same.
What they did last year is they just focused on Lewis, and Lewis just happens to be in the midfield now.
But it's not a midfield car. I mean, they weren't. I thought they were in like a weird spot in this race, right? Where they weren't. They were definitely not on pace of the Ferrari, but I thought did fairly well at staying on the back of the Red Bulls. And they were clearly ahead of the McLarens and the rest of the midfield. So it goes, I'll keep saying they're not a midfield car.
No.
They're just a shitty front running car.
They're the third best car on the grid. I think they've been that way, in my opinion, all three races. Anyone thinks that they're going to compete for the midfields, delusional. But they're quick. They're just not at the standard of Ferrari or Red Bull right now.
Yeah, I know they we'll get into a little bit more around Mercedes later, but I know they a bunch of teams brought updates this week to the race, and Mercedes was supposed to bring a big rear wing update. And then the last I heard was it was too logistically difficult to get it there in time, which I don't know how it is because it's a wing, throw it in Toto's jet, it can arrive. I don't know if that's go through like FIA scrutineering before it can get on the track or not, but that seems like a weird excuse. But they kind of performed nonetheless, and even some of the upgrades that other teams brought this week, I don't know how much they really did. I know Red Bull brought a front wing that Max ran in practice, and then I believe Checo ran it in the race.
I think Checo had it in practice. He was the one with all the aero rakes and stuff on his car.
So it was the opposite then, because whoever ran it in practice didn't run it in the race, which I thought was interesting. So maybe it just wasn't performing like they thought. But it seems like the McLaren brought some decent updates.
I heard they didn't bring any updates.
So they just unlocked that performance from the car somehow?
They're saying it's all track-based, so the track just due to the car being the smooth surface and kind of the fast circuit is the only thing that really that car performed well at. So at least that's what Lando was saying after the race. But
interesting.
Yeah, it makes sense because he's been complaining about just not having any downforce on the car, and I think the circuit doesn't really require much of it. So
yeah. And then the other, I didn't really see any big improvements from anybody else with updates. I know Haas brought some, I think, a new front wing end plate.
Haas had the diffuser.
I don't know.
Same with Ferrari. I'm looking at the list here. Red Bull had the front wing end plate. Alpine had a floor rear brake cover. McLaren had winglets, whatever those are.
So they did have something.
And Aston brought a new rear wing that was a lot slower.
Well, how many of them did they bring? Because they had to replace a couple of them.
More than just a couple. Jesus.
Well, I think that's a good transition into the shit list then. For anybody new to the podcast, we've got our what we call the shit list, which is right now it's three teams that aren't really worth our too much of our time or energy to talk about, although I'm going to rip on one of them for a little bit today and kind of break our 90-second rule. But those three teams that are currently on the shit list are Williams, Alfa Romeo, and Aston Martin. Let's start with, I think, the lowest hanging fruit, which is Alfa Romeo. Anybody have thoughts on them?
Risk?
No, they're totally just there. Bottas is good. Joe, I think, is learning, but no thoughts or comments on Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, kind of a quiet race for them. Didn't really do much of anything during the whole weekend, really.
Yeah, so sleepiest P8 and P11, I think.
Yeah,
that I've ever seen. So, and with Williams, it actually took me a long time to realize Latifi was still in the race. I was hopeful at one point because I was like, oh, maybe Latifi will cause another big yellow flag and bunch up the field a little bit for some exciting last lap action. But he managed to keep it together. But pretty sleepy from him. Cool strategy from Albon, trying to, you know, make it last 54 laps in the same hard tires.
That was dope.
I think that what Alex Albon did yesterday was more impressive than anything George Russell has done in his Formula One career.
Dude, Alex Albon scored a point for Williams in a worse car in three races, and it took Georgie Russell over there 3 fucking years.
That's what I'm saying. Golden boy George Russell.
Yeah.
FP3, FP2 champ. I mean, his only real achievement was qualifying second in the wet in Spa last year. Right. Remember, yeah. I mean, look, Latifi is the GOAT, but that first race, that first race that Williams was running in the points, remember, like, Latifi was 3 or 4 places ahead of him.
Yeah, one or two. No, I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe 1 or 2, but yeah.
Yeah, I think Albon has been clearly more ahead of Latifi. Or there's a bigger gap between Albon and Latifi than I feel like there ever was with Albon and with George and Latifi. So
correct.
Maybe he'll get a Merck contract after Lewis retires.
Could you imagine Red Bull?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised to see Albon in the Red Bull next year. If he keeps beating Latifi like he is, I think they'll go back to him.
It's possible.
They like him. So
yeah, they obviously have a big, big love affair with Albon. So we'll see what happens with him. And then Aston Martin.
I still think I still think it's not too far out there to say that Sebastian Vettel is personally trying to bankrupt Lawrence Stroll.
Sure seem like it.
Look, I can see it, right? So Lawrence Stroll has his big jets and his big yachts. He's got a massive carbon footprint. Seb's like, fuck this guy. I'm going to keep putting him to the wall so he has less yacht money.
He's a petty tyrant. He's just trying to make it so this guy doesn't want to be an F1 anymore.
I mean, those cars are maybe the worst performing cars I think that I've seen since I started watching F1.
I mean, look.
Dude. Worse than Haas last year?
No, they're not worse than last
year. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, but at least Haas wasn't crashy last year. I mean, they were crashy a little bit, but they didn't. I mean, what did they have to rebuild that car 4 fucking times this weekend?
Had to rebuild each of them twice, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus, they're going to be – they're probably out of chassis. I don't even think the upgrade parts that they were testing made it through FP1 before Stroll fucking bend them. Those mechanics, if anything, those are probably the best mechanics on the grid at this point.
I'd be so pissed off.
At what point do you quit out of principle?
Yeah. Right now. Absolutely right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And Stroll, the dude is that'll put him up to probably, what, 9 penalty points?
He had 7.
I think 8.
Did he only get 1 for that incident?
He got 2. He got 3 this weekend, which I think put him on 8. I think he was
put him on 8. Five. Okay.
Somebody needs to call fucking social services or something, because that guy is a danger to himself and others on the track. Like, he needs to be committed to like some mental institute for safekeeping. I don't know. He refuses to check his mirrors after 5 years or however long he's been in Formula One. He has the same incidents where he just keeps merging into people.
But dude, it wasn't his fault. The track turned right, so that's why I hit him. Did you not hear him?
I mean, that was his excuse. Yeah.
That was his fuck. Oh, well, the track was going right, and I couldn't see him. I was like, what?
Well, it's perfect. This perfectly points back to your theory risk of the dude can't turn, which is why Monza is his best track, because it's just a bunch of straights. And the little kink to the right just overwhelmed his senses, and there was nothing he could do about it.
I'm telling you, it's a good theory.
I'm a believer now. I don't even think it's a theory anymore. I think it's fact. The dude just, and then whining about it on radio, like
oh my god, yeah.
Latifi came across and hit him.
I mean, I don't know if Latifi necessarily should have tried to pass him, or I mean, I know he wanted his place back. He pulled over because he thought Lance was on a hot lap, but it turns out he wasn't, so he wanted to get his gap back. But I don't know, maybe it's better to just let that situation go. Especially when the guy you're trying to pass is Lance Stroll.
Yeah. Well, he did that. Did he get penalty points for that? Yeah, he got a three place grid drop, right? And then during the race, he was swerving like an asshole down that main front and got another 5 second penalty. So yeah, not a good weekend for him.
But then he ran Bottas off the track and somehow didn't get a penalty for that.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah,
can't wait till he's at 12 points, and we'll get to see Hulk in the car. Which, well, that's not, or maybe what's what is the they've got a reserve driver or a testing driver for them. She's like a stunt driver. She did like stunt driving and like James Bond, and she's done some other races. Just put her in the car.
I don't know if someone who makes a living crashing Aston Martin.
I mean, that's how Stroll
I was about to say, yeah. You seem to have a type.
Well, the only Aston Martin performed decently was the safety car, and they were complaining that Vantage, which is one of my favorite cars out there, as about 3 or 4 seconds a lap slower than the Mercedes equivalent safety car that they use. So just get Aston Martin off the track. But okay, that's plenty. That's plenty enough time on those three teams. So let's just start going down the grid. I've got first up, which is AlphaTauri. Gasly finished P9. Yuki finished P15. I like Yuki on the track because it always means that there's a potential for a yellow flag or a red flag. but he just was nowhere this weekend. I mean, considering there was 17.
Yeah.
I mean, he was back there when Gasly is up in P9, but kind of a slow weekend for both of them.
I think this is Yuki's last year in Formula One. They kept him because he didn't do that bad, and he showed signs of life last year. But I mean, they kidnapped him, moved him to Italy. They've done everything in their power to try to get this guy to perform. And I mean, you saw it in Drive to Survive, right? It's kind of funny. Ha ha ha. I don't like to work out. I don't like to train. But at some point it's like, all right, dude, like you're going to have to train these guys that are the best in the world. What do they train all the time? You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's I would tend to agree. It's looking like that. So maybe Albon goes back over to AlphaTauri next year. Although Red Bull's got too many young drivers, I think, to do that. They need to keep using at least one of those seats to develop drivers. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah. It was a very underwhelming race from them. Kind of like Alfa Romeo. Both of them kind of. You didn't forget about him, but you kind of forgot about him when you were watching the race, you know?
Yeah, I actually was. I mean, it makes sense from a strategy standpoint and everything, but those kind of last 10 laps when Gasly was stuck behind Stroll and then just decided, well, Stroll's got a 5-second time penalty, so I'm not going to be able to clear him and get to the next car up the order anyway, so I'll just sit here camp behind Stroll. It was, I think, a little bit disappointing because it backed up the rest of the battle that was, I think K-Mag was back there and Schumacher was back there and Zhou was back there, and it kind of iced that battle a little bit.
Was that when Alonso complained that they wouldn't pass him?
Yeah, because okay. It was Gasly was like, well, I'm not going to, why risk passing Stroll? Because he's probably just going to crash into me. so why risk that? And he's got a 5-second time penalty, and it was like another 8-second gap up the road or something like that. So he wasn't going to make up two positions. So he's like, I'll just take this and kind of roll with it. But
talk about an all-time radio call is, why aren't they passing him?
You know, I've got him further down the list, but I think now would be a good time to talk about Alpine, because we had Fernando, which is the finished P17, which I thought he was. I don't know what happened. Because he was running really, really high. He had a lot of pace. He did that. Let's go long one stop strategy starting on the hards, and then when he switched to the mediums, it's like the mediums went away from him and like 10 laps and he had a pit again.
Yeah, well,
pit twice?
Yeah. He got stuck in that DRS train and kept trying to fight to pass, and he just couldn't fight, and I think he just destroyed
his tires. So he just cooked his tires. That's... Yeah. Because he was looking... This is a disappointing weekend from him. So much potential, I think, that showed, because he was on that lap in quali where he was absolutely hooked up.
Oh, God, yeah.
Purple Sector 2. He was like half a tenth off in Sector 1 and was... I think I want to say it was like half a tenth up in sector 3 before he crashed going into that like second to last turn. You know, I'm going to say he crashed, but it wasn't really his fault. I think the engine died and then the hydraulics died, and he just was along for the ride at that point.
Yeah, it was sad to see. I like Fernando, so I would have really liked to see him start a pole. That'd been a fun race to watch, but I mean, the Alpine's quick if they can just find some reliability, but like you were talking about before, I guess they don't really care too much. I mean, they care, but they didn't care as much about reliability on building that engine. So we'll see if they can somehow figure something out. But if they can figure it all out, that car looks pretty quick. So
yeah, well, they've got the performance and or roughly have the performance that from what we can tell. And I know Horner, unrelated team, but. Same principle that Alpine was going at, where Horner was asked afterwards about the reliability issues of the Red Bull, and he's like, yeah, it's something we have to get on top of, but I'd rather fix the reliability issues with a fast car than have to fix a reliable car and make it fast. So I think they'll figure it out. It just sucks because Fernando's already, that was his third power unit of the season. So yep. Unless if they can...
I don't think they had to replace it. I think they just fixed the hydraulic issue and it was all good.
Yeah, I don't think they have to replace that one, but he's already through his allotment in three races.
Yeah, he's already on his third.
I don't know if the other power units are completely cooked or not. So they might be able to fix them because they are allowed to fix them. I don't know. I don't know what creates what like is the transition between like a fixed power unit or what qualifies as a new power unit. But they are allowed to fix them, so maybe they'll get them back. But that's going to suck to have. Is it a 5-place grid drop every time?
Yeah.
They have to introduce a new engine, and he's only on. I mean, there's still 21 more races. Is it 24 races this year?
22 official, right? I think it's supposed to be 23.
Yeah.
So
19 or 20 races left this year. So he's going to take some more power units, but
yeah, but the only good thing about well, not good thing, but. I guess one caveat to that, though, is there's going to be a lot of people taking engine penalties this year, so he's not going to be alone.
No. So. And they're not going to run out of money, which is a good thing. So
they got Otmar in charge now, man. That guy's good. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exciting stuff to come from them. Ocon in seventh. He had a good race. Nothing to write home about, but did what he was supposed to do and brought it home. I think, did he start P8? So he made up one spot for Max going DNF, but
yeah, he started P8.
Yeah. So he's getting good points at least. I mean, he's been consistently in the points doing what he needs to do. So
they both look good. Both the Alpine drivers. So it's, if they can just figure the car out and get it more reliable, I think they have a chance to do good things this year. Honestly, it's making me like them. I never thought I'd like that team, but with Fernando, Otmar, Ocon still, but
yeah, the verdict's still out for me on Ocon, but I do like Fernando. I think the only team I wouldn't cheer for if he raced for would be Mercedes.
I'll never go to Mercedes.
But if he went back to Ferrari, I'd probably jump on a little bit of a bandwagon. I'd buy one of his hats at least.
Kamoa.
Kamoa, yeah.
I don't even know what that is, but I want one.
So do you see his he's always wearing like a Kamoa hat. He's got like a clothing line. It's the Fernando Alonso clothing line, and it's called Kamoa. It's out of Spain. They've got some cool sunglasses and shirts. And
oh, so that his Kamoa is his clothing
line.
It's
his company, yeah. Yeah, it's his company. It's probably a tax thing.
They would never do anything like that.
No.
No. Fernando, he's the guy that moved back to Spain to pay taxes on COVID.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you guys in here? We didn't talk about this already?
No, we didn't talk about this.
Oh, when COVID hit. Yeah. And the Spanish government was really hurting. He like moved back to Spain. So he was paying taxes in Spain. So they had a little bit more money. Because that's how much money Fernando Alonso is.
Yeah, if Fernando Alonso is able to make a dent in that situation, then a power move.
That's like you can do it no wrong now. Imagine getting pulled over some bullshit like that. Be like, I paid for the country to survive. Go fuck yourself.
All right. Well, I think that's enough from Alpine. Haas is who I had next on the list. Poor weekend, poor showing from them. I had they've traditionally done pretty well here, so I was pretty shocked. They just didn't seem to be able to get any speed out of the car, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me because we know that they've got speed. They've got a Ferrari power unit in it, which is a fast power unit. They've had speed at the first two races this year. I don't know what happened in here.
I get the idea that Mick is not very good at telling them what's wrong with the car or how they need to fix it to help set it up. Gunther was talking about how Kevin being sick on Friday really hurt them. Because I just get the picture that Kevin is the one giving all the feedback. Like, we need to change this. We need to change this. And,
interesting. And him
not feeling good. And I guess he ate some bad Australian food and was vomiting the entire day.
Oh.
Yeah, that would not be
fun. I don't know. That's just a theory, but it just seems like they were off the back foot all weekend. They never really had a chance.
That theory could make sense. I mean, he's obviously the more experienced driver. He's got experience now outside of Formula One that just helps in the way you communicate, like the way the car is moving and that kind of stuff to engineers. I mean, he raced an IndyCar race and he's raced WEC and endurance racing all last year. So it would make sense if he has a better ability to communicate with engineers and how to fix setups and that kind of stuff. So that's a shame if that's true, though. I think that was kind of the whole point of Mick last year on that car was, and the dead season was to build kind of those skills, but he's still young, so I guess he'll learn.
We'll have to see how long his last name will keep him in Formula One, because he's I don't think he has it.
I think this is a make or break year for him. I think he does have it, but I think if he performs poorly this year consistently, he could be out.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he can avoid being crashy. I think he's got a shot at sticking around Formula One for a while. But if he's just occasionally fast, but equally occasionally crashy with the budget cap, I think teams are going to look a lot harder at crashy drivers, fast crashy drivers, and shy away from them. Because that wreck in Jeddah cost $1 million to fix, and
yeah.
Haas already is not operating at the budget cap. So,
well, the interesting thing about Mick too, remember when he won F2, it wasn't by being fast; it was by being consistent.
Right.
And I don't know if you can really prove that when you're not in a very fast car. So that might be hard for him to get that across.
Yeah, it's hard to complain you're doing a good job when you're consistently P19.
Yeah.
right.
But I mean, if the car can rebound and be like it was in the first two races, then he has a chance. And I'm hoping the only reason they were slow is just because track specific, it just wasn't, or maybe they, like you were talking about, they just didn't have it set up right. But
yeah, I know, I think there was a little pressure on them too, just because I know they're short on parts. They didn't they didn't have a spare chassis with them in Australia. So like my guess is during all the practice rounds, they probably were not pushing it.
Oh yeah,
as I hard just because thing. If they went into the wall, that car's out for the race.
That was my theory originally. Was that during all the practices they turned the engine way down just to basically not save their ass and
yeah
so they could go race. But then quality, they looked the same pace. So I was like, well, maybe that's not right.
Well, if they weren't pushing it that hard, they wouldn't be able to fine tune like the setup that like takes them to the edge, right, of their car performance. So
we'll see. We'll see what happens in the future here at Imola. Hopefully it's better for them.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see. But I'm really tired of seeing Haas go on these, like putting Kevin on these like hard tire first strategies.
Oh, yeah.
It seems it hasn't worked out.
Twice
this year. I mean, I know they did that. They tried that a couple times last year. It never worked out. Now they weren't going to make up any places last year anyway. But it seems like they've got a decent enough car that they don't have to like try to go super crazy on tire strategy to make up places, because cars are able to follow this year.
I completely agree.
K-Mag's a pretty aggressive driver, yeah. So he'll be willing to take the risks, put them on the right strategy, and let them make things happen.
And my thing is, like, if you want to try to do the long stint, if you think that's a good strategy, that's fine. But don't do it on K-Mag. Do it on Mick.
Yeah.
Because K-Mag's a hell of a driver, and he can make up his own places. And just keep him on a normal strategy, and things will work out your way sometimes, and they won't the other times. And I think it'd be a lot better in the long run if they just stop trying to play those games with him.
Yeah. Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. But and he did have some good battles with Bottas, I thought, out the race, and that kind of leads into Alfa Romeo. Bottas finished P8 and Zhou finished P11. Oh, wait, we're not talking about Alfa Romeo because they're in the shit list.
Yeah.
I've got them written down here twice. But right ahead of them and all that fun stuff was McLaren. Lando P4.
We're back, baby.
Danny P5. We're back.
Life is good.
Yeah. Congrats. I didn't think he'd make it to Q3 for quite some time. I still think it's track specific for this one, so I don't think you're back by any means. But yeah, they look good. Honestly, they the car looked quick, and I think the more interesting thing is that Lando and Danny Rick looked almost identical in terms of pace. So there was not a huge difference.
Yeah, Danny. I think that's a big thing. He's probably starting to get comfortable in the car. I mean, there's probably a little bit of confidence because he's finally back home in Melbourne.
Yeah, and don't forget,
excited to race,
home crowd gives you. Sorry, home crowd gives you 10 horsepower more. So.
Oh yeah, is that how it works?
Yeah, but historically, he's done really poorly in Australia.
Well, he's hit or miss. he either doesn't finish or he comes in fourth.
But yeah, but I mean, in fourth in cars that should have been on the front row.
Or he gets DQ'd.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought, but I was excited. I don't know. It sounds like they brought one upgrade, which is the winglets. Are the winglets the piece by the mirrors?
No, it's the something on the rear wing, I think.
Okay. I don't know. I'll have to figure out what those are. But it seems like either they unlocked a little bit of performance, which I think is they're going to figure out the car. And Danny's starting to come up to grips with the car, which is going to be helpful.
According to Lando, they didn't change anything.
Yeah.
So we'll see how much of this is real.
Yeah, he was super pessimistic in the F1 TV like post race show.
Last week and this week, or not last, 2 weeks ago and this week, he's been very pessimistic. Good old Lando.
Which at some point I feel like that's I don't know. I don't necessarily like it. It just seems like he's pessimistic.
Dude, jump on board the I hate Lando train. I love that.
I don't hate Lando. I think he's the best British driver on the grid. I'm going to say that over and over and over again. But something about like it just doesn't seem like it's his. I don't know, like the personality that and the kind of the persona that he's built up over the last 2 years. This just feels very counter to that. Where he's like, oh yeah, there's nothing we can do about it. Our car sucks. We got to figure it out. I don't know. I don't really like that.
No, but I like it. It's. I mean, did you want someone? Would you rather someone be telling, like, blowing smoke up your ass and saying, "Yeah, this is great. We've been working really hard," or just say, "Yeah, I don't know where this came from. Like, it was a good result, but let's not get ahead of ourselves."
But that's not what
he's telling the truth.
He didn't say good result, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. He said this car is shit. Like, there's one way to say it, and there's the other way where you say this car is shit, and you're basically saying all those idiot engineers back in the factory fucked this up.
Yeah, I guess that's where I feel like it's not. Like, I wonder how like the morale at McLaren is like, do they have a high morale internally? Like, and forget what Lando says, like, and how the press takes it and that kind of stuff. But like, it feels like they just don't have a lot of like morale. Like, they're kind of defeated. They thought this was going to be a car fighting at the front, and they're clearly not.
I think it's down personally.
I'm sure whoever designed the brake cooling system is not feeling too good about himself.
No.
No, I'm sure it's like extremely stressful to be an employee for McLaren right now. I mean, because after Spain, they were talking about how good the McLaren looked, and I don't know. I still think it's a good car.
I don't understand why everyone thinks they were going to be good after one testing run in Spain, and like, doesn't mean shit. Just because they were good before anybody else, like,
well, okay then,
it doesn't mean anything. Like.
Yeah, we know testing doesn't mean anything at this point.
I don't, but that's what people keep saying. Oh, they look so quick in Spain. I just don't understand. I'm like, what do you mean? Who cares? It doesn't matter. Like, that's testing, and that's the first testing before you can make upgrades. So that literally means nothing. So I just don't get why people keep going back to that. But anyway, sorry. Continue.
Well, we'll see what happens. Your prediction of them not making Q3 before the summer break has been squashed in three races.
That was my second prediction. That was my, I'm going to build on my prediction because I got a little too excited.
You got a little too excited.
My original one is they were going to take a huge step back. I think I said they weren't going to finish higher than P6 and the constructors. That one's still looking good.
Yeah, that's still looking potential. All right, so on to the not quite leaders of the field, but certainly not quite the midfield car that the Mercedes PR department is trying to make it sound like it is. Mercedes George P3, first podium, first real race podium, I think, if we're not going to count Spa of the quali podium. And Lewis P4. George got a little bit lucky with the safety car, but again, outpacing and outperforming the 7-time world champion, Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, that, what was the comment, Lewis?
Oh, we just gonna jump straight into the radio message? I think we're going to.
Can we? Well, hold on, I have one thing to say before that is I don't like for all Mercedes has been winning all these championships. Everyone said they have the best strategy, and to tell Russell to let Checo pass him to save the tires, I just don't understand that. Like, it's a fucking moto race, Toto. What are you doing? Like, why are you letting someone pass you? That makes no fucking sense.
No,
I mean, I don't. It just that really angered me because people talk about how amazing there is. I'm like, Jesus Christ, dude, like race. This is what we're watching. Race. Don't just let somebody pass.
Well, it didn't even really seem like it was that big of a pace advantage that Perez
no. had. And Russell looked really good. There it was a great fight back and forth. And I mean, like,
well, it's hard to pass there if you have a similar pace car. Like we already know this. Now it doesn't look that hard compared to previous years with the new cars because they're able to follow closer. But you get these like DRS trains. But yeah, I don't get that because Perez was starting to get a little bit more aggressive on George, and the chances of him making a mistake and going off track or something were pretty high, which would have given George the P2. So I don't understand what they're saying for, because they were clearly ahead of Lando and the McLaren. So it's not like they were a serious contender or a serious threat to, you know, take George down. So I guess the only thing I think of is like, hey, they thought Checo was burning tires quickly, and so let's save your tires and for an attack at the end. But then they weren't even able to put that together. So
I just, it made no sense to me, because not only could he have, like, worst case scenario in my head, George uses all of his tires to defend Checo. Well, Lewis catches up, and then you just let Lewis by, and then Lewis goes and attacks Checo for P2.
Right.
So, like, I just don't get what they were doing there, and that kind of angered me a little. I don't know why it angered me so much, but I was just like, this is stupid. Like, but anyway.
Yeah, it was. And sometimes there's, like, a more of a backstory behind, like, what they're doing. But at the time, I was actually watching George's helmet cam, or not helmet cam, but the in-car thing. And there wasn't like that radio message was taken out of context because there was like a different story. It was just like, that's what the conversation was. Like, tire management's more important than race position. I don't get it. It's not what I wanted to see, but
no,
it is what it is. So on to the famous radio message now. Lewis Hamilton complaining once again over radio. What did he say exactly?
He said, "You guys put me in a really difficult position."
Huh. Yeah. I don't even know where to start with this one.
I know where to start.
Go ahead.
This guy. All right, listen. I think that international soccer players are the biggest prima donnas in the world. With the exception of Lewis Hamilton. This dude complains more. He has more than anybody else in Formula One history, right? 7 world champions, 105 some odd victories, right? This guy's got everything for the last 8 years. And then he's complaining the one time he's not beating his teammate. Right? It's just ridiculous. And you saw what happened in 2016 when he ruined his childhood friendship with Nico because Nico actually competed with him. It was the only time that's ever happened. And I'm still pretty sure they're not friends to this day.
No, they're not.
And you know, you go back and watch those interviews from that season, and Lewis is talking about, you know, he was basically accusing them of sabotaging his engines to give Nico a chance and all this stuff, right? The guy is an absolute sore loser. He's the first person in the car to blame the team for all the strategy. And then another example in 2016, you remember when they did that thing where the team wasn't allowed to give them instructions on like race settings and stuff because they wanted the drivers to figure it out? Well, in Monaco, he had that issue with one setting and he didn't know what setting to put it onto. And, you know, he's just complaining like, can you guys tell me, well, how's the weather? Huh? You know, and then they asked Nico. He's like, yeah, I had the same problem, but it's pretty easy to figure out how to switch it. You know, like, so he wants to act like he knows best in all these situations. but he doesn't. And then he gets out of the car and he's like, yeah, team did a good job today, blah, 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 blah. And like, he's this big team player. It's like, at least have some consistency. If you're going to complain, then if you're going to light him up while you're in the car, light him up when you're out of the car too.
Yeah. I thought that was I don't understand what situation Mark would have put him in.
It makes no sense to me.
They were asking him to lift and coast, which is the only thing that I've heard. I went back and listened to the team radio. They're asking to lift and coast, but I don't understand why that's putting him in a difficult situation if he was burning his tires and burning his fuel faster to try to catch the front. So I don't know. I know, but that point about him competing with his teammate, we've touched on it every episode. So if you want our full thoughts on it, go back and watch all of our previous episodes and you'll pick up a theme. But I was watching earlier in the race, was watching Lewis's footage, because I was like, he's going to start complaining. So I wanted to turn on his team radio and his driver cam. And it was after that first pit stop that George was able to take advantage of to move up the field. And Lewis came over the radio and said, oh, so I guess George has track position now, huh? It was almost as though he just realized that, like, he's not going to get the preferential. He's so used to getting the preferential strategy and the preferential everything. But now he's got a teammate that's not going to just kind of bend over and give that to him. And so I think he just self-imploded a little bit. Like,
well, he made a comment about that, too. He said something like, I don't know exactly. I'm just going to make some shit up here. But he basically said, like, it wasn't fair. And I think Bono came over the radio and said, hey, man, it's just luck. I mean, nothing we can do about it. And it's just like, dude, come on, man. Like,
not to mention, he might also be the luckiest driver in Formula One. Well, from 2017 onward, I don't think he had a single DNF until last year or something. It was something crazy. He went like 90 races in a row without having a DNF.
Well, yeah, when you're 30 seconds in front of the field, you don't have to worry about nothing.
But even, I mean, just talk about not having any reliability issues.
Well, you can coast. You don't have to push it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even like, so he takes out Verstappen at Silverstone last year, somehow like limps around to get a new front wing or whatever he needed, or had no damage at all.
Yeah, still finishes first.
And he still finishes first, mm-hmm. You know, while his championship rival's in the hospital. So, like, the guy is just extremely lucky, and the one time he doesn't, it's the end of the world. So
yeah, well, it's proven. We've been talking a lot about this whole like performance versus reliability thing. We'll see how it shakes out over the season, but it seems like while the performance isn't there, the reliability is there for Mercedes, and this is two races now where they've gone into the weekend not being expected to do well. They've said as much, and then they find themselves on a podium because of the right place, right time, and reliability issues.
Reliability issue. All right, Max. If we can get into Ferrari later, but.
Well, no, I mean.
Carlos should have been up there, and he just fucked up, so.
Yeah, but I mean, even in the first race, it wasn't just Max, it was Red Bull.
Well, Red Bull's
both cars died, and Lewis found his way to the podium. And
yeah, but I mean, they're the third, like I said before, they are the third fastest team. So to me, they should always be four or five. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I do know that I think I have a more hatred towards George Russell now than I do for Lewis Hamilton. If that's saying something. That guy, whenever he speaks, it just, I just don't like it.
How there's like drivers. I felt like Leclerc's first year at Ferrari was a lot this way, where there's both Mercedes and Ferrari, their PR team is like on point about everything, and they're always managing PR and what they're saying. And it feels like George went through this Mercedes PR training indoctrination, and it just sounds like every time he opens his mouth, it's a PR line. Yeah. And it's the same way Leclerc felt. I felt that exact same way about Leclerc his first year at Ferrari, because Ferrari's got like a really like everything they say they have to run through their PR department. So it sounded like, you know, he had never been in this situation before, because I don't think when he was with Alfa Romeo, they could afford a PR department. They couldn't even turn on their wind tunnel because they didn't have enough money. So like he goes from that situation to being like have PR ingrained in his head, and George just sounds like a PR like a PR line every time he opens the thing, and it's fine. But like, I felt when he was at Williams, he showed a lot of more emotion, and he was kind of.
I thought it was fake. Have you seen the video of him when he scored his first points over Williams? And I don't know who's behind him, but he starts like crying because he's so happy. And there's two drivers behind him just laughing their ass off at him. Like, what are you doing, dude? Like, congrats, you score a point. Why are you crying? Like, it's just like, and then the stupid comments he made on Drive to Survive about bitching and moaning about he wasn't on it the year prior. And I don't know. I just can't stand the guy anymore. I mean, it's gotten pretty bad to where I hate all the British drivers, but I think Lando might be my favorite. only because the Let's Go Lando song. I fucking love that song.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I'm just tired of talking about Lewis complaining. Like, it just seems like it keeps happening. Keeps happening over and over and over again. So I'm going to stop talking about it for this episode. We'll see you again in, you know, episode 6 or whatever we're on. We'll definitely talk about it again. But let's get to the more exciting fight, which was the Red Bulls versus Ferraris. I say more exciting, but it really, I guess it wasn't.
I mean, it was during the restarts. I mean, they went wheel to wheel a couple times, yeah. Max and Charles. But
so I don't think it matters. I don't think it would have mattered long term, but. Yeah, so Leclerc benefited from the two laps after the safety car restart before you can use DRS because, yeah, Verstappen was right on Leclerc's tail. But then two laps later, he had to back off, and Leclerc was 2 seconds down the road already. So it wouldn't have mattered long term, but I think it would have given Verstappen more of an opportunity to pass him, and then Leclerc would have passed him back 2 seconds later.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Ferraris look fast. Yeah, one Ferrari looks fast.
Damn right they do. Fast.
Yeah. So, does anybody know what the deal is with Carlos? Like, why?
Dude, he can't handle pressure. I'm serious, dude. I don't think he can. He's in a contract year. I know he's negotiating right now with Ferrari, and he's trying to get a long term deal. And he's got Charles, who's just kicking ass and taking names right now. And is easily the number one driver, and I think it's getting to his head.
Yeah, but what actually happened? Was it just did he have his normal runs? Did he have his normal runs in quali?
No. So he was about to cross the finish line when the red flag came out.
Yeah.
Okay, so he didn't get his fastest lap.
Correct.
Yes, but
he didn't get his.
He didn't get that lap, but he went back out after the red flag and he didn't manage his tires right, so he didn't have them on before the lap and he fucked it up.
Oh, no, they couldn't start his car. They had a problem in the garage and they couldn't start his car, so he lost like 3.5 minutes after the red flag.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. So he came out late, so he couldn't do the normal tire preparation.
I was going to say there was something funky with it because I didn't think it was his fault. I mean, not that it's not his fault for not getting it in there, but I thought there was some like kind of extenuating circumstances. So he missed his tire warm up.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Because yeah, they had a problem with the steering wheel. I think you're right.
Do you feel bad now saying he couldn't stand up to the pressure?
No, I still think that
he's still spun.
He's still spun.
Stuck in the gravel.
I mean that. Yeah, from the race standpoint, he had. I think they're blaming the steering wheel again, which I think is bullshit because they changed out the steering wheel. But I guess his anti-stall was all fucked up.
Well, so that's what cost them a poor start too. So
yeah,
because you have to calibrate the clutch bite point, and so they swapped it out at the last minute, and it had it didn't have it calibrated for that track or that setup or the gearing or whatever they did.
I find it hard to believe, but let's just for argument's sake say
that wasn't true. That wasn't even Ferrari that was saying that. That was my boy. I think Sam Collins.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Ferrari said that, it too. So.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah. But let's say for argument's sake, that is true. He still fucked up. I mean, the reason he spun was completely his fault.
Completely. Yeah.
So yeah, he got a poor start, whether that was his fault or not, that's up for debate. And then just couldn't handle the pressure.
Yeah. We'll see.
Doesn't matter. You should just crown Charles now. He's the fucking champion. Let's get the season over with.
Who else started on hard tires? Because I think that was a problem too.
K-Mag
and Alonso.
Yeah.
And they got off okay.
Tires, he looked like he was on ice skates though. That first lap.
Yeah, well, exactly. So why are you going for a stupid move when you're on ice skates?
Because he's in a Ferrari, bro.
Exactly. Like you're in a Ferrari. You can wait a lap before your tires are hot. Like you're gonna be fine.
Yeah, but even after that start, like the words I'm gonna say are gonna feed right into your bullshit about him not being able to stand the pressure. But with a start that's poor, that is poor. His job is to be in the fight with the Red Bulls at the front. So you've got to make those moves in the first two or three laps to be able to get up there. Or they're gonna be so far down the field that you can't. He'd be just worthless in that fight at the front because he'd be 30 seconds, you know, behind them on track. So it's out of range to affect the pit stops or force somebody going long or force somebody coming in early. So he really had no choice. Once he made that start, I think if he had gone off the line and just held ninth, he probably could have waited till, you know, two laps, three laps, whatever, till DRS was open and start to make his way back up the field. But as soon as he had that poor start that he went down to like 14 or 15 or something like that, he had no choice but to just start sending it.
I don't know, man. He's on the hard tire, so he's going to be going along a long stint anyway. So you're already set up there to take your time. And then number two, there hasn't been a race all season yet to where we haven't had a safety car or some type of caution to where you can catch back up.
Yeah,
so it's like with the reliability issues everyone's having now, I think it's, yeah, you don't want to bet your race on it. But at the same point, I wouldn't, rather than spinning out and going for a stupid move that early in the race. It's just like, I don't know. I feel like cooler heads would have prevailed and realized, hey, it's okay. Let's just work our way back. I mean, look at Checo a few years ago when he won his first race. He was in P20 and made it all the way back. Yeah. Even Albano started in last and just went for a long stint and got 10th. So it's like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
I know Williams is on the do not talk about list, but I want to spend more time on Alex Albon.
Yeah, we can do that. We can always make it. I mean, this is our podcast, so it's our rules.
Let's loop it into the Red Bull discussion.
And so speaking of Carlos and getting in on the first lap, second lap, whatever it was the second lap?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Man, I thought that was like, okay, Red Bull is back in the constructors' fight because they were going to be, you know, probably on for a double podium. Carlos is going to be a DNF, and they need to be able to make up that double DNF, you know, out of Bahrain. And I was like, okay, cool, they're back in this fight, but they're not anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they had the pace. I think
the reliability issues again, right? I mean, have either of you heard what happened in Max's car? The only thing I heard was a separate issue.
No,
what happened in Bahrain?
It sounds like they won't know until they get the car back to the factory and open it up.
Man,
rumors are power unit, but
I think it just started leaking something. I would say like a hose severed or something.
Yeah, because Max came over radio and said that he started smelling something funny. Mm. So I don't know if it was, I don't think hydraulic fluid's flammable, but maybe an oil leak.
I don't know.
But it was, that was what a letdown.
The second time in 2 years we've watched Max just having an extremely boring race, and then all of a sudden the camera cuts to him and he's in the wall.
Yeah. I mean, that was like Azerbaijan, right? Where he was just clearly out in front with a blown tire. But Checo did what he was supposed to do in this race, and I think Checo performed really well. I mean, hell, he wasn't far from putting it on pole in qualifying. He did some pretty good runs.
He had a fantastic race.
And he did exactly what he needed to do and took that second podium spot.
I mean, Checo got kind of screwed by that safety car too, and he didn't bitch and moan about it. He went and did what he had to do and got P2. So,
yeah, he overtook, I think, Russell once, and he had a fight a little bit to get back in that spot.
Well, Hamilton overtook him originally.
Yeah, well, Hamilton overtook him at the start. He kind of got I went back and watched it. He kind of got squeezed by Max.
By Max. Yeah.
I was a little bit like, what the hell what's going on? I mean, I don't think he would have passed Max. I think he would have backed out, but Max kind of squeezed him to the outside of the track, and it just opened it wide open. Did he get passed by both George and
Lewis,
or is just Lewis? And then after the pit stop, George was in front of him. So you got to go wheel to wheel with both of them. That move he made around the outside on Lewis and going into like that, that back thing, like that. That's the move Carlos sent it into the wall on, or sent it into the gravel trap on. And I thought that was a bold move, because that's not a good passing point. Now he got lucky.
Yeah, very lucky.
There was the yellow flag shortly thereafter because his angle and his launch out of that next turn, Lewis probably would have been able to attack back. But I don't think he would have been able. Lewis could have made it stick. I mean, no. Red Bull clearly had the pace, and Checo was not going to let. I mean, that's his job, right? Is to keep Merck behind him. Yeah. The Mexican Minister of Defense is right. Like, what a great title.
That's an all-time nickname. That's an all-time nickname.
It really is. They should make it. I mean, if Mexico had any balls, they would make it like an honorary. Like they would like swear him in. They would like swear him in for 15 minutes, so they could he could get like listed on Wikipedia as like a former Minister of Defense. Just do like a temporary swear in. But you want to talk about Albon?
Well, I just think it's going to be interesting because, like you guys were saying, Perez did his job and he looked good. But I think if Albon still keeps crushing it like he is, and he's miles ahead of his teammate in that car, I think Red Bull is going to want to take him back.
You think he goes to Red Bull or he goes to AlphaTauri?
I think he'll go to Red Bull.
Kick Checo out.
Yeah, I think so. Look, unfortunately,
Red Bull's got an interesting thing. So they're going to have Gasly. Helmut Marko is already talking about, you know, they'll lose Gasly if they can't put him in a Red Bull.
Yep.
And then they've got Albon. I would see them putting Gasly in a Red Bull before they put Albon's comfortable at Williams.
I disagree.
But they really like Alex
Albon. I think Russ, you've hit on this before. I think Gasly burned some bridges in Red Bull, and I think Alex Albon did the exact opposite, and everybody at the team likes him, so I think that plays a huge factor into it.
But do you get rid of Checo, which, like, I mean, I know we're only a couple races into this, but, like, he's proven that he can race next to Max, and that's what Albon failed to do. He couldn't handle the pressure, and Gasly couldn't handle the pressure, and so if they think they're going to be fighting at the front against Ferrari, they can't have like I don't know if this guy is good enough, or oh, I don't know if this guy can handle the pressure over the course of the season. Shit, there's a chance Checo finishes higher in the point driver's championship than Max does this year if he keeps performing like he is.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it'll be a very hard decision because at one point it's like, I think Red Bull has to decide, are we going to shoot for now or future? Because Checo's not going to be around for... Well, I don't know how long he's going to race for. Maybe he'll be Alonso and Lewis and race forever, but
he might get the Bottas 1 year deal treatment.
Yeah, and I don't. Where, yeah,
I mean, but who else would take Checo? I mean, I know
a lot. I think a lot of teams would take Checo.
I think a lot of teams would take him now. Yeah, but who would?
But where does he go? Right,
Andretti 2024 entry.
I mean,
I mean, if I'm Andretti, you right, and you're going to start a Formula One team, you should bring in an American driver, which could potentially be Colton Herta, but then you also need an experienced F1 driver in your team, and what better
a Mexican driver too?
A Mexican driver, that's clutch. Like I think you heard it here first: Sergio Perez, Colton Herta, side by side, 11th team on the grid.
I honestly think
bringing a champion, a world drivers champion in North America.
I think he would go to Mercedes because they're going to want Russell. Once Lewis is gone, they're going to want Russell to be number one, and they're going to want someone who's a proven number two. That's Checo in a nutshell right there. And he has no ties to any other team really. So why wouldn't he go to Mercedes? And he just does what he's told. That's like Mercedes' dream person. So
I don't know. It'll be this. What they call it? Silly season is going to be really, really silly this year, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. And we've got a podcast that we can talk about it on now.
But no, I just want to the Alex Albon Appreciation Day.
He had a hell of a race.
Coming.
Did you see?
I mean, dude, he took. I mean, there were safety cars involved, right? But he took tires that Pirelli was saying 40 laps. You know, and usually Pirelli is pretty close on those, and then once you go over, they're like imploding on you.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like they just lose performance. It's like, hey, you have like 40 laps before these things explode. And he went 57 laps on them.
I know Pirelli was saying 40 laps, but they were saying pretty early on in the commentary that the team thought that that was like a significant underestimation of, and you saw Lance try to do it.
Yeah.
And so I think the teams were thinking that those hards could potentially last, you know, 55 laps or whatever it was. Because we saw Lance try it. Lance doesn't have the skill to nurse tires for that long.
He can barely keep the car on the track.
I mean, I guess he did finish. I mean, if you don't take the penalty, he did finish in what, P10?
Yeah, I think so.
That's a big if.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Did you see the comments between Albon and Norris after the race?
Yeah, so they just took over the F1.
That was great.
The F1 post race show. Did you watch that, Risk?
No, I didn't
see it. So you should go watch it, cuz Rosanna Tennant was she's doing the post race because she was on the ground. Yeah, yeah. Her and Oscar Piastri were doing it. And they were interviewing Albon, and Albon was just kind of doing his thing. And then Lando, because, you know, him and Lando are like best friends or really good friends. And Lando just kind of walks up and starts messing with Albon, and then grabs a microphone. And then they just, the next, 8 minutes or so of the post-race show, the camera is just like, I totally forgot Rosanna Tennant and Oscar Piastri were there. And it was just Lando and Albon going back and forth, talking a little bit of shit. Like,
it was
great. It was awesome. You need to go back and watch that, because it was worth it.
I did see one clip, and it was more of a Rosanna Tennant take than a Lando or Alex. But I don't know. Lando said something like, he like knew something about somebody else's race. Rosanna was like, Alonzo's. And he's like, are your engineers just talking to you constantly? And he's like, no, I just asked Harry. He was right there. it's just like, that makes sense.
It was funny because at one point Rosanna was like, yeah, and so Albon, how did it feel, you know, taking those tires to the end? And Lando's like, you did what?
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I was right behind Danny Rick until the last lap I pitted. He goes, why'd you pit in the last laps? I didn't pit the whole race. What? You should have just finished like that. Screw the rules.
Yeah, Lando's like, screw it, you should have just finished. But it was pretty good. Yeah, go back and watch that.
But that Williams was keeping up with the McLaren on them old tires too. So that was,
that was the most impressive part of it, because Alonso started to drop back on his old tires, Lance started to drop back on his old tires, but Alex was keeping pace with everybody around them.
I think he was setting personal best too. I mean, he had a lot less fuel, don't get me wrong, but still.
I mean, the fact that 50 plus lap old tires. I wonder if Williams just like figured something out. Like if this long stint, if Albon's, forget like data they get from the TV, because that would be like data they get from Mazepin. Like, it's just worthless data. But like, I wonder if that car is just really easy on tires. And so I wonder if we're going to start seeing this like every race from Albon now is just like put on the hards and go, and then just pray there's a safety car in like the last 10 laps that he can change. And if not, they pit on the last lap and take it in.
I think since they were in Australia, aka the upside down world, things just didn't happen the way they're supposed to happen. And just magically. That
explains most of the race, actually.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Ferrari tweeted something when they went out there, a picture of Melbourne upside down.
I'm sure that they were actually, the Mercedes pit wall was just watching the sector times, like, all right, let's go another. And then he does,
I mean, Williams,
best. He's like, and he's like, all right, that's still good, let's go another. And then they probably did that for 15 laps, and then they're like, oh shit, we got to go now.
Well, I think they said, they asked him about, because they were like, how did you know, or when did you know you're going to take him all the way to the race? And he's like, well, they kept asking me if the tires were good. I kept saying yes. And they're like, what about plus 5, plus 10, whatever? And he goes, started doing the math. And I was like, shit, that's the whole thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I've never seen that before. I thought it was cool.
That was so cool.
I think he's maybe the next great driver, right? Because he's proven it in a Williams.
That's how it works, man.
That's how it works, right?
You're the number one Williams driver. You're the next world champion. George's
title, yeah. Future world champion, Alex Albon.
If he would have been, I know he is kind of British, but if he would have been like racing under the British flag, they'd be freaking out about him right now.
That's what really got me fired up about the George Russell comparison was that if George Russell did that last year, that's all we would be hearing about in the post race was what an absolute epic race George Russell had and all that nonsense. So
yeah, and we're not going to hear about it as much with Albon.
No.
Because he's racing under with a tie flag. But it's also very different. If you turn off Sky Sports F1 and watch like the F1 TV broadcast, it's a lot less aggressive love for Lewis and George.
It's still there, but it's less aggressive.
I need to figure out my Chromecast situation. Get that sorted so
it's worth it.
Yeah.
Watch on the TV.
Yeah.
Shout out to Andy with the F1 TV subscription. I have one more comment. But to me, one of the most exciting parts of the race was watching these guys come out of the pits on the hard tires and just being absolutely on ice skates and almost wrecking. It happened to Daniel Ricciardo, and I think it happened to Perez too, where he came out close to the guy in front of him or behind him.
Oh, yeah.
And then
Perez almost,
for like four or five corners, they're like almost dying because those tires are cold. So
I saw an interview with Perez about that, and he said, honestly, because I think there was two people behind him, but I don't remember who they were. He's like, I saw the one car, but I had no idea about the second car. I was like, oh, fuck. So he had all them tires, this truck.
That was Daniel. Yeah.
Tires and still didn't realize there was two people behind him. It could have been really bad.
All right, Risk. Well, take us through the predictions from or how we were from last week and where we stand on the points. I know Zeno was getting crushed going into this weekend. I think I was in second place.
Yeah, nothing's really changed on that front. Zeno's still being crushed.
I thought I had Checo in second, did I not?
Oh, wait, let me check that. Oh, shit.
Yes, right. I thought.
Math errors. Look at that. All right.
Fucking collusion. Collusion.
We need to recalculate.
We're going to have to audit this shit.
This is bullshit, man. God, you can't even remember how much these things count as points. Now you forgot that I put Checo in second.
All right, let me update.
I was watching the race. All right. It's like, all right, thank God. I might actually have a chance here.
All right, so after the updated scores.
I'm still
Zeno still being crushed.
How bad?
So you have 18 points.
Don't you guys?
But have the big mover is Cole correctly guessing first and second place, and correctly getting the number of DNFs.
Fuck.
So big week for Cole.
He big week for Cole
into first place with a 9-point advantage over me.
What's the points totals?
So 43 for Cole, 34 for myself.
Jesus.
And 18 for Mr. Zeno.
Hey, I'm the Leclerc of this thing, huh?
You would think I would have Leclerc winning every fucking race, but I for some stupid reason choose Max. I don't even understand my own self.
Well, I guess it worked out for you, but yeah, you went Red Bull 1-2.
That's
an interesting decision.
Well, yeah, Max usually is pretty good on Australia, so. And they look good the race prior, so.
All right, there's an error in the algorithm. I'll work to fix that going forward. But
yeah, we're gonna have to audit this at like the summer break or something. See how it's going. So next week we've got.
We're off next week.
We're off next week. Is it 2 weeks? The 20 April 20. I don't even know what day it is anymore.
24th.
The 24th is the race, right? So yep. in Imola.
So we'll hold it off on predictions, right?
Yeah,
we can hold off on predictions for this one. But I do have just for the sake of of continuing our F1 rules for American dummies. Just we'll spend 5 seconds on tires because it was a question that we were going back and forth with, Risk and I, at least during the race, about Albon and when he could pit to take these last ones. Like, could he, you know, I think the question we had was, could he come in on lap 54 or whatever, because his pit box is technically before the pit line, and then just roll across the thing. So the answer to that question is no. You have to complete a full lap.
Okay.
Well, and so it's you have to complete a full lap from your pit box. So what he did, because he came in on last lap, like he didn't like he crossed the start finish straight the first time, right, from on pit lane, but then he did a full lap around. So you got to do a full lap, but right. but for people that are new to F1, there's five different tire compounds. They pick three of them for a weekend, and then you have to use two different compounds during the race. So there's a hard, a medium, and a soft. You see them on the tires. Red is the softest, yellow is the medium, and white's the hardest. The hard tires last longer but are slower, and the red tires are softer and don't last as long. But I thought what was interesting, and I think this is the first time I've seen it, I could be wrong, but for this weekend, they didn't just do three compounds in a row. They had the soft, which was the C, was it the C2? C5, and then they had this, they skipped one and then went two others, so it wasn't three compounds in a row. So there was like a super soft, like almost back like years ago when they had the super soft tires. There was like one that was just really purely built for speed that basically just turned into a qualifying tire, because I don't know if anybody actually ran it during the race. And then they had like the medium and the hards, which were the race tires for everybody. But I thought that was a cool idea.
Yeah, I think
I just didn't understand it.
Well, Pirelli came out and said that C3 and C4 compounds are very similar, so that really made no point to have two of essentially the same tire. So they went to C5 for the soft.
Yeah, but then nobody.
They could have. So. Could have. You never know. If there was a safety car towards the end of the race, slap them on. Why not?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. At least Pirelli's doing something to try to mix it up a little bit. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. So I think that's really all I had for this week. In non F1 news, Grosjean took second place in IndyCar today.
Oh, nice!
So Haas drivers are doing better this year than they have in previous years. Yeah. Does anybody else have anything?
No, it's okay. I certainly won't talk about the annoying European fans complaining about having to wake up early to watch the race. I won't make any comments of the sort.
Oh, you won't?
I won't.
Okay. That's
pretty. I certainly won't mention how Crofty several times had to comment about, if you're a British fan, just waking up like halfway into the race. And how absurd that is for all of us here on the West Coast of the United States, where my normal race starting time is 6 a.m. So,
yeah, that's brutal. No need to comment on that. That's brutal. No need
to feel like by not commenting, you may have commented.
That's a non-comment comment.
Maybe it is. Maybe it is.
Pleading the fifth over here.
It's my damn right as an American. All right.
All right. Well, we'll end this plane. So thanks everybody for tuning in for another episode of Late Breaks Hot Takes, America's number one F1 podcast. Give us a follow. Give us a review if you can. Reviews help us.
Out of it, please. Hopefully.
Yeah. Positive review. If you have a negative review,
just doesn't matter. Email five stars.
Yeah.
Just five actually, stars. Actually, whatever you want, just
do five stars.
Yeah. I like that. Leave it five stars and tell us we suck. And if you leave five stars, we'll pay more attention to it. It's totally fine.
Just hose us. Doesn't matter. Completely dog us. That's fine.
If we start getting funny reviews, we should read them out here. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. So the craziest review that we get next week, we'll read on air.
Ooh.
I haven't checked Spotify, but I'll check iTunes. That's where you should leave it. But anyway, thanks for following us. If you have Twitter and you enjoy Twitter, follow us on Twitter at F1 Hot Takes Pod. You might just get me drunk tweeting. Watching the race after too much tequila. sometimes it happens.
Sometimes.
But it's entertaining nonetheless.
Just sometimes.
So thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back next week. I know we don't have a race next week, but we'll be back with some predictions for Imola and any news that comes on over the break. And possibly the F1 Hot Takes podcast book club introduction.
Because that's going to be a thing where we tease it for eternity.
Well, I finally ordered a book, so. All right, everybody, fuck off. Have a good night.
That. Is that how we're signing off now? Fuck off and have a good night?
No, I'm gonna edit that part out.
Oh, I was going to say, I love that. That's a great sign off.
Okay, we can leave it.